This episode of Current Geek is brought to you by Stay Roasted, the ultimate fresh roasted coffee subscription. Get your first bag of coffee for free, you only pay shipping, when you visit stayroasted.com/geek. That's stayroasted.com/geek.
I have
Current Geek!
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Current Geek. This is the weekly proceedings of the Frog Pants All-Stars, geeks of the world and you, to keep you current on all things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson with Tom Merritt. Hello, Tom.
I am excited more than usual for more than the usual number of reasons this week, Scott.
How many reasons?
First of all, every minute we're doing this show, which is always a pleasure, is one more minute that I don't have to be driving 45 minutes to Walmart to pick up my pet's prescription, which I have to do immediately after this show.
Oh gosh, 45 minutes. That's a long time.
So couple hour, 3 hour show, 4 hour show, I'm in.
Is this an LA thing that you got to go that far? And
yeah, we're just not near any of them. And the difference between the prescription at Walmart and somewhere else is $9 versus
$150. That's ridiculous, that amount of money. I can't
but
believe that.
But the even better reason I'm excited for this show is our amazing guests.
Oh, let me tell you, we got guests today. I'm so excited to introduce both of them. Let's start with Jamie Broadnax. She's a podcaster, among other things, and is with us tonight. Hello, Jamie.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
I'm excited to talk a little bit later in the show about some of the work you're doing and what you're up to. Looking forward to that. Also with us, Ariel Brackfield, or Feld. There's no field. It's
hey,
Feld.
Guys.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. I'm so happy to be on this with you. Thank you.
Well, it's great having you as well. We'll talk a bit more about what's up with Ariel these days as well as we get going with the show. But as always, as Tom knows, we begin with the headlines.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Tom, what's on the docket this week?
We're going to have a production meeting about whether we want to continue to do obituaries, because it's depressing how many amazing people we've lost in this past year. And of course, we lost another one. You guys always submit these on the subreddit, so we assume that you want to hear us talk about it. And of course, we got the very sad news this week that Ron Glass, famous for playing Ron Harris on Barney Miller. I remember being a fan of him then, and of course, a big fan of him as Shepherd Book on Firefly, passed away this week at age 71.
He was one of the nicest guys by all accounts, like just the sweetest man. Everybody who talked about him or knew him just couldn't say enough about him. I loved him on Firefly. Everybody always said, oh, if they ever do, it'll be a bummer if they ever do a Firefly reunion, because in the movie, spoiler, it's like 11 years old, okay, people, so I'm not spoiling anything. But in the movie, his character dies, and so he wouldn't have been in a reboot anyway. So, you know, that always made me a little sad. One of my favorite characters. And then to find out the man behind the acting has passed, it was a real bummer. And actually sent me this week on a hunt for Barney Miller streaming someplace. And I got bad news for everybody. That's not streaming anywhere. And I don't know why. There's lots of old shows from that era from that network streaming all over the place on Hulu and Netflix. And for whatever reason, Barney Miller, they haven't done the transfer. Maybe the tapes are somewhere in a vault. Somebody couldn't get the deal. I don't know.
You got to get it on MeTV, one of those sub HD channels.
That must be it. So now I got to go back to cable. Thanks, Tom. Got to go all the way back to cable.
No, that's over the air. You can't even get that on cable usually.
Yeah. But this has been a weird year. Do either of you have any affinity for Ron Glass and his work?
Oh my God. I it was one of those things where Firefly was the first show. Star Trek was in reruns by the time that, you know, I came around. I vaguely remember some episodes in my early years, but Firefly was one of those shows that I was in love with from the very beginning. You know, it took me a while to find my way to Buffy and a few other things, but Firefly was there in my heart from the start. So it's a big blow. What about you, Jamie?
Yeah, you know, I'm actually late to the Firefly train. I binge watched Firefly on Netflix last year. I was one of those late bloomers, but it was such a great series, such a short-lived series. And Shepherd Book was by far one of the best characters on that show. And I really love how he would check for Malcolm in various scenes, you know, and he had some really great one-liners. So, this is a really sad passing for a lot of us.
I wonder why more religious leaders can't emulate him.
Yeah, like actual religious leaders.
Like actual real religious leaders. Yeah. Why can't they emulate
Yeah, that he one? Has a... It's funny you should say that, because back when the show was fresh and on the air, my kids were little, and they, you know, when they're that age, they have all kinds of questions about things. And I had raised them on Star Trek and all sorts of nerdy stuff, and we watched Firefly. And I remember having a conversation with my oldest daughter about why Book was a good representation of what I hope religious people... and those who are to be examples of religious ways act in the future. Whatever our far-flung spaceship, strange combination of cultures, you know, Firefly vision might actually be, he always struck me as, I hope that's the kind of the deal. I hope that's how people behave. And he was great that way. But 71's also just way too young. And
yeah.
Very young. You know. Yeah. It'd be great to see all of our religious leaders wearing ponytails and man buns.
Yeah.
Maybe
we need to convert more secret operatives for the Alliance to become shepherds.
Ah,
there you go.
There you go, Tom. I like your thinking there. But anyway, yeah, take off 2016. We've had it with your deaths and stuff.
2016, you're drunk. Go home.
No kidding.
Yeah, stop it.
The time called on 2016. All right, let's talk about something a little more fun. Netflix updated its Android and iOS apps Wednesday to allow you to download some of the movies and shows you get on there for offline viewing. If you've got a show available for download, you'll see a down arrow next to the episode listing. You just click on that, and I think you get 72 hours or so to watch it. A Netflix rep told Recode's Peter Kafka that Disney-owned video will not be available, including movies like Zootopia, but also Netflix originals like Jessica Jones and Daredevil that are made with Marvel, which is owned by Disney. So that might change if they can get a deal with Disney. But right now, Disney isn't giving them the rights to do that.
So we talked on Wednesday, was it, on DTNS about this very thing. And I got a lot of feedback about that conversation. Some people had all sorts of theories about why Disney didn't want to do this. And you and I had sort of pontificated that it's all about the deals and their own desire to see their platform succeed as well. Mm-hmm. And Disney wanting to have their stuff be more exclusive to their platforms, yet not restrict it entirely from other platforms, but kind of bummed out about that part of it. But I went and tested this and looked around, and I'm happy to report that most of what's on Netflix, movies, TV shows, archives, most of it is downloadable, with a few exceptions. And again, most of those are Disney and a couple of other cases. Does this affect you much when it comes to this sort of thing, Ariel? Are you sad?
I'm just surprised that Disney's concerned about money, you know? I mean, I think Disney, I think, utter disregard for profit, you know? So really surprised that they're limiting their content availability.
Sure. I mean, the way I look at it, and I'd love to hear your take as well, Jamie, but I wondered this aloud with Tom, and he sort of walked me back a few steps, but are people worried about piracy? Are we still dealing with an industry and a bunch of content makers or content controllers who are terrified that during those 72 hours, somebody could take, Iron Man, Winter Soldier, and turn it into their very own copy and never have to pay for a service or rent it or buy it again? And I don't know. I mean, maybe they are, maybe they're not, but it seems strange that it's Disney, given that Disney, if anyone knows sort of the landscape of, media, movies, how much money's being made, where the money's coming from, you'd think it'd be Disney. So unless they know something we don't know, that's probably not the reason.
The reason is that Disney probably has some other rights tied up for downloadable versions like this, maybe with Amazon, maybe with some other provider, and they just can't give them to Netflix. It could be cost too. Ariel's not wrong. And I'm certain that that's part of it. I don't think piracy worries are any part of it, to be honest.
Agreed.
Jamie, are you mad you can't take Jessica Jones on the road?
You know, I honestly didn't even know that this was something that was a thing that you could download offline content from Netflix. So it doesn't bother me at all. But, you know, it doesn't surprise me that Disney decided to kind of hold on to their stuff because they have their own D23 Expo and they're slowly taking bits and pieces from Comic-Con and, kind of holding it on their own. So you're not seeing much Marvel stuff being presented at San Diego Comic-Con much these days. But yeah, I think, you know, for the most part, if you're able to download the stuff that's available, that's great. But it doesn't really affect me because I'm a live tweeter. and Jessica Jones and Luke Cage and all those fun Marvel shows that you can see on Netflix. I love to live tweet them with the fans as the show is happening, whether we decide to synchronize the premiere together or just, you know, kind of pick a date and choose. So, it doesn't really affect me much.
That's super cool.
I've got a scenario, because I get what you're saying, which is if you're going to live tweet, you have internet. If you have internet, you don't need to download it for offline.
Right.
You could, and you won't need to do this, but you could live tweet from an airplane with this, where you couldn't have.
That's true, yeah.
Well, with like, so you could have, you'd have crappy enough, you'd have internet crappy, but good enough to do tweeting on the plane.
Yeah, yeah.
But not good enough to download a movie. So therefore, you already had it on the plane. Yeah, there's your use case. And I had a bunch of them, like trips in a van full of kids to, you know, California to go to Disneyland. You got these tablets in the car. You want to keep everybody happy. And now you've got out in the middle of the desert, all the movies you could ever want. Pre-downloaded, hopefully within 72 hours of needing to see them. That's the only restriction I don't exactly understand. I don't think, I'm saying this completely out of knowing or not knowing this, but I don't think Amazon has that restriction.
They do.
They do.
Their restriction doesn't kick until you start playing it.
Oh, though. That's what it was. Okay. I knew there was some difference. So maybe that would work. If it doesn't kick in until you start watching it, well, then who cares, because the kids will watch through it and then you're done and you don't have to worry about running out some clock. But it is interesting to note that that because Amazon already does this, maybe they do ever, like Tom said this and it just hit me for the first time, maybe they have a deal with Disney that right. already allows for this and they can't just willy-nilly do that with any old service. So I meant to go test this week and I didn't, but I want to see what the Disney movies or Disney content that is available on Amazon Prime, whether or not that'll let me download it.
Well, you're certainly not going to get Jessica Jones on Amazon Prime.
No,
so
that's
it's not
true.
That.
No.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Good point.
I think given the, we're still kind of in the Wild West with live streaming and that, you know, in terms of the film industry, like this is still, you know, you very much have a separation between the studio system and any filmmakers and things like that. So it's like, in terms of going back to the piracy issue, I don't know that they would lose a lot of revenue from that choice. I think it's a control measure made by a gasping, dying giant trying to adjust to the streaming era.
Mm. Could be. Who knows? I don't know. I feel like Disney has enough, like, I don't know. Jamie, you kind of also rung a bell with me. Disney has enough footprint, enough wherewithal, enough money, certainly, to do their own thing across the board. Like,
there have been a lot of rumors that they are building that, or at least considering it.
I mean, look how big Star Wars Celebration is. That's now a Disney property and everything mm-hmm. around Star Wars. Marvel stuff has enough heft that it could probably do something on its own. Mm-hmm. So I think they're big enough that they could say, do we really need Comic-Con? It reminds me of Apple back in the day when they were like, do we need Macworld? Can't we just do our own thing? And they ended up doing exactly that. So maybe they don't need any of this, and they, by association, don't need to help, you know, Netflix with whatever their business plans are. They can do their own thing. So maybe this is all the same.
I feel it's incumbent to point out at this juncture that if I were Netflix, I would be standing and jumping up and down yelling at us saying, the news is that we have downloadable video now. You guys are just focusing on the Disney stuff we don't have. Look at all the stuff we do have.
No, it's a totally good point. You make a totally valid point. I don't know why it should be even be a sticker that they're doing it. I think it's because it's just them and everybody wants to immediately go, oh, giant corporate company won't get in line. And we have some natural tendency to want to fight that. But no, you're right. It's great. I want to be able to download my stuff and have it offline for a myriad of reasons. And thank you, Netflix, I guess, for doing it.
All right. Lionsgate announced that Lin-Manuel Miranda, you know him from Hamilton, you know him from Moana, probably, will be the creative producer behind the screen adaptation of the Patrick Rothfuss books, The Kingkiller Chronicles. And Patrick Rothfuss is still working on the third of these books. Lionsgate is planning a feature film on The Name of the Wind and then a continuing tie-in TV series based on the world. So we don't know if it'll actually go right into Wise Man's Fear or what, but the book will follow the adventures of Quoth, who, if you haven't read the books, is an arcanist and a musician. And Miranda will compose original music and songs for the adaptations.
My daughter's favorite books ever, first two books, are these. Tom, you've interviewed Patrick a number of times. The only thing that surprises me about it is, I mean, does this just mean that Lin-Manuel Miranda is a huge fantasy fan and it was just a destined coming together of these great minds or what? Because it does seem like it came out of nowhere.
Oh, yeah. If I'm Patrick Rothfuss and I've been waiting to find the right person to handle the music that I wrote, quoth, doing, Lin-Manuel Miranda's my guy. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I guess that Miranda must just be an admirer of the works. I don't know.
It'd have to be. I just feel like he's busy enough, like has tons of projects going on. It's not like he was sitting around with nothing to do. And I love that.
So far from that. Yeah.
I've built a story in my head that these two are admirers from afar, and they came together, and now we're going to get this amazing work. Have either of our guests read these books? Do you guys familiar with these particular books?
Sadly not.
Yes, same here.
Oh, they're so good.
I read those.
They're so good.
First thing, stop the show and go start reading these books. They're really good. No, they seriously should get on your to-read list.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm here for Lin-Manuel Miranda to take over the world. I'm here for that. The Hamilton mixtape dropped today. It's brilliant. Everything that he touches is brilliant. I used to live in New York City, and I actually saw him when he did In the Heights, which was prior to Hamilton. So he's just a remarkable performer, a remarkable songwriter, artist, and everything he touches turns to gold. So I'm here for this project, and I will definitely be there opening weekend, not even knowing much of what this story is about. But just his name alone being attached to it is enough for me to feel confident that this is going to be really great.
Yeah. It's surprising. The books are surprising. I don't even know how to describe them. Tom, certainly having interviewed him, probably has even a better perspective on this than I do. But after reading the first book, it struck me that it has been a while since a fantasy series started and felt like it was something really big and important, like sort of Game of Thrones style important, although that took a while to germinate and finally, you know, find its footing and then become the huge mega thing it is. But you know, these kinds of seminal moments, specifically in fantasy and science fiction writing, they come along and then boom, they kind of explode. At least in my circles, this book is like beloved by everyone I know.
Yeah.
So anyway,
he created a big wide world, like many authors writing today, got that world from playing role-playing games and developed it from there. And so it feels lived in. It feels wide. It feels like it exists off the page. And then he did the harder trick as a writer, which is to create compelling characters that you want to get to know more about, and a central story that you want to find out how it develops, and a central mystery. So I'm very interested in who the screenwriter this is going to be. The Quoth music is essential to the story, and as I think we all agree, they've nailed that in getting the right person. So if they can get an equally talented screenwriter to adapt this, this is going to be an amazing film and TV series.
We didn't get dates on any of this, right? They're just
nothing like that yet.
All right.
The Internet Archive, which aims to be the Internet's library and is most famous, you probably know it from the Wayback Machine, where you can type in, you know, Scott's old website from 1999 and see what it looked like back then, or mine. Yeah.
Please don't. Please don't.
Well, they were in years past planning to create a full backup of the Internet, and they have done that. And so now they're looking for some redundancy, and they're planning to create a full backup of their backup of the Internet in Canada. They cited protection against things like earthquakes. The backup that they have right now, all of their servers are in San Francisco, so that's a real concern. Legal challenges, institutional failure, any number of things. It's just good to have redundancy. And archive.org is nonprofit. It's soliciting donations to fund the effort. I, for one, give them money because I just think it's important to have an internet library like that going. And so I at least encourage you to check it out.
Yeah. Also, you and I both post a decent amount of content there, both for backup reasons and just direct for our listeners. Sometimes I get a lot of stuff off archive.org.
Yeah. I put all my shows up there, even if that's not where they're hosted, just so there's a copy of them.
Yeah. The internet will never forget this hour we've spent together today. So there was, I want to add one little seed, and we don't actually talk much about politics on the show at all, really, on this show. However, I had this like little conspiracy on Wednesday that it's just kind of funny that under a new presidential reign, regardless of your politics, somebody like archive.org has decided to move their data to Canada. It's just usually the joke that you're moving to Canada, right? So to me, I thought that was really funny. But then Tom was like, yeah, but it's probably these reasons. And I agreed. I totally agree. It's the reasons that they have stated, both officially and then what we've talked about here. However, that very same day, Somebody had suggested that perhaps the new administration was one of the reasons, and archive.org's official Twitter account retweeted that message. So it may be they actually are concerned about things. I don't know. You have to look at it from a data perspective, and maybe there are policy changes in the wind or potential ones that made them go, you know, we needed to do this anyway. Maybe now's a good time.
But we're already living in a surveillance state.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
And so so that alone is concern. And when you have more uncertainty about what direction that's going to take, that's going to accelerate your plans.
Yeah. Plus, Canada's nice. Those guys are nice, right? That's the stereotype. They're nice.
That's what they want you to think.
I know. Well,
it's true. They're very nice. And they say eh after every sentence. At least the ones in Winnipeg do.
Oh, yeah.
But I think it's great. It's very interesting when you said nobody ever forgets. That's so true. And in a world where we do have a man that's going to be running the country that says very interesting things that usually are very contradictory in nature, it's good to have these receipts with a archive backup system. So that way we can hold people's feet to the fire when they turn around and say things that, in fact, are actually not true.
Yeah.
So,
or even the other way around, where we just forget what was said, period. Or in my case, even Tom's example of my old crappy website from 99, sometimes it's good to be reminded kind of where my head was at. Why did it look like that? What was I thinking? You know, those kinds of questions come up every time I look at an old version of a site I did. So I totally get that. Ariola, how do you feel about data in Canada?
I think as long as it's being stored safely, I mean, it really speaks to our long-term view as a civilization. You know, I mean, the internet caused, I think, one of the best growth spurts of our civilization, of our species, you know, in terms of how to actually connect with people around the world, this worldview, being able to share information, instantaneous communication. So being able to archive our evolution through the internet, I think, is monumentally important. I mean, this is affecting our psychology. This is affecting how we perceive the world. So it's like getting these little diaries, basically, of day-to-day activity and interaction. It gives insight into a society that historians in the future will crave. I mean, we look to diaries from the Spanish-American War or you know, the Civil War, and it provides such incredible insight. Mm-hmm. So definitely, I think as long as it's being stored, I'm for it. I think the fact that it moved to Canada is very funny.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, it didn't move as in being replaced. They still have the San Francisco servers. They're just also redundant servers in Canada. Just in case. That's good policy.
I
have
a backup
locally and one remotely myself of my little bits.
I do too. Equipment. I don't know where my remote backup physically is, but it's something safe, I hope.
Tom said
the other day, or you had made the comment, Tom, that this is not unlike other human endeavors to quote unquote back up other human archival history, and that includes preserving libraries and books and actual paper and papyrus and go back as far as you want to cave drawings, but this just feels like the modern equivalent of that. And I guess, isn't it nice that an organization is working away on that and has been for so many years? It kind of is a little disconcerting that there aren't more high profile groups like this doing this. Like, you'd think there'd be more other efforts, and maybe there are, and I'm unaware of them, but this is certainly the most forward facing of the efforts to archive.
Well, and so many people don't even know about this one, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And even if you've heard of it, you probably just think of the Wayback Machine. You don't realize that there is a whole complete collection of public domain films. There are, audio history of major speeches. They have a constantly refreshed collection of all news broadcasts, which is under fair use allowed for them to do, and they worked directly with news organizations during the election to be able to provide all kinds of footage for people to be able to access and see what was being said. So there's so many more things going on at archive.org than just the preservation of websites, which was its main mission when it started out.
It's like hoarders took their power and turned it into something awesome. You know what I mean? Like, it's
hoarding for good.
That instinct to keep everything is really working here. It's really working for this. So anyway.
We also have the Library of Congress that does this too, mm-hmm. with web archives.
Yeah.
And so it's not just them. You know, there are other groups that do that. And yeah, definitely the Library of Congress is one that I remember the most. So yeah, I look forward to seeing my GeoCities page.
Yeah. It's out there for the taking.
With this. Yep. Yeah.
How incredible though. I mean, you look at, again, when this endeavor first took place, we were dealing with basically the equivalent of 8-bit websites, you know, mm-hmm. and the amount of data that is able to be stored at a given time. And you just see this exponential explosion of what you're able to save. Like, the big thing with hoarders is that they don't know when to stop, you know, right. they just keep going. And I think as we continue to expand our tech in terms of what we're able to store, we won't hit any walls where we have to be selective. So it's, I'd be interested to see who makes the cut when we hit that data brink, you know?
Yeah. At some point. Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. Or if you ever do.
Yeah.
Maybe maybe there's a dead cat under a stack of paper somewhere. We still know about it. Oh, I shouldn't say that. You have a cat
under construction GIF from 1998.
Nice. Spinning skull.
Finally, at the Game Awards Thursday, Nintendo released two new trailers of Zelda Breath of the Wild, one showing snippets of the world, some monsters, a nice-looking friendly dog, the other showing a sequence with Link speaking to a bird-headed quest giver named Cass and battling a lizard creature called Lizals. They also had Hideo Kojima, who created Metal Gear Solid, receive the Industry Icon Award and then thank everyone by showing off a trailer for the PS4 exclusive game Death Stranding, which actually featured Guillermo del Toro, the filmmaker, in mm-hmm. game form, mm-hmm. and Mads Mikkelsen.
Yeah.
There were also new trailers for Mass Effect Andromeda, the Prey reboot, a brief teaser for Telltale Games' Guardians of the Galaxy episodic project. Finally, Phoenix Labs, made up of former Riot and BioWare devs, showed a teaser for a co-op adventure game called Dauntless.
Also,
lots to choose from.
Yeah,
to talk
about. Huge amounts of stuff came out of it. It's a event known for some news and some trailers and things like that. But I feel like this year was even more of that. Jeff Keighley does a great job with it. The awards themselves. Big congratulations to our friends at Blizzard for Overwatch winning Game of the Year, which was super cool. But if I'm being honest, the game I want to play the most is absolutely this new Zelda game, and I cannot wait for next year. And I heard somebody, one of you, I think it was you, Ariel, you sounded a little excited too about it.
Oh God. Yeah. And it's, again, that was a lot of people, Link to the Past is still unbeatable to me, mm-hmm. you know, like in terms of just sheer nostalgic joy and gameplay that you can keep going back to. So, I kind of gave up hope after Twilight Princess a little bit, so I'm very, very, very excited to see Zelda, hopefully in its rekindled glory.
Yeah, I'm pretty jazzed about it. If you ever get a chance to play the 3DS game Between Two Worlds, Legend of Zelda Between Two Worlds, so good. It is. It's like Link to the Past, but new. It's really, really great.
I can't wait for Zelda VR. Like, if you actually get to go on an adventure with Link, you know?
That'd be cool. I'm convinced that the way that VR should be handled for future big releases like this is not necessarily make it so the game has to adhere to VR gameplay standards. In other words, you know, it doesn't have to be a perfect sort of VR experience, but let me walk around those environments at the least.
Yeah.
Let me walk around. Well, actually, Doom does this. I was just going to say, let me walk around the Doom levels, but Doom literally introduced a way for me to do that with a Vive. I'd like to be able to do that. I want to walk around these Overwatch and Skyrim levels. Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily need to play. I just want to experience the space. Mm-hmm. And I think that would be super rad. I was blown away this week. This is a total side note, but and Tom, I meant to tell you about this, but I downloaded Google Earth for the the Vive, for the HTC Vive.
Wow.
And I thought, oh, this will be all right. It'll just be the spinning Earth and I can kind of look at maps and it'll be like Google Earth is on the desktop. And in some ways it is, but what I didn't expect is the feeling of being on the ground in Times Square or in the middle of the desert in Arizona or at any number of locations around the world. Because what they have is detailed satellite imagery and geometry built on top of that to make buildings. Even in the desert, there's, you know, somebody's trailer and a truck out front. And you don't just see it all from some bird's eye view. You can fly right down to human size and walk around the city, any number of cities, San Francisco, whatever, and the buildings are to scale, and it is one of the most eerie, weirdest, most exciting things.
Post-apocalyptic?
Yeah, it really is. Like, I walked around my own neighborhood.
Wow.
And it looks like trees are just lumpy. Because you know how that is when you zoom in on your maps on your phone or right. something. Those objects look like melted wax almost. They're just kind of weirdly textured. That all carries over to be one of the weirdest, coolest experiences I've had in VR, like, period. I can't, and it's not even meant to be that, I don't think. Maybe it just was a happy accident, but I cannot recommend that experience enough, and I really hope this comes to Oculus, PSVR, and anywhere else people can do VR, because it is mind-blowing, and I spent hours in there just walking around my childhood home, looking at my old school I grew up near.
Wow.
The cars look like lumpy chunks of melted cheese. Like, it's the weirdest feeling.
It's the holodeck. Like, you're able to just, it's outstanding. I mean, can you imagine where we're going to be a year from now once they work out, you know, the once they're able to make the cameras really reflect cinematic experience?
Oh, yeah. No, it'll be crazy. I mean, there's already some stuff that's such high fidelity, but this idea that, I don't know, we're not far from is the four of us on a podcast in a virtual room sitting at virtual couches talking.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of that stuff that really, really interests me. But anyway, anyone listening to me, my big recommendation this week, try Google Earth on the Vive if you have one. If you don't, hope it comes to those other platforms, because it is wicked cool. Tom, you especially, you have a Vive. You should check it out.
When you mentioned the PlayStation VR, that is the only reason why I will move from my Xbox One to PlayStation, by the way. Like, that is the only cause to do so. But I cannot wait. I got to save up a little bit to do it, but it looks so outstanding.
That's pretty cool. Well, there you go. Hey, those are our news stories, everybody. Big thanks to everybody, and also congrats to Hideo Kojima. He deserves it. He's also weird, and that trailer's crazy. And if you want to see how crazy, go watch that trailer. It's insane.
Big thanks to our subredditors, too, the folks at currentgeek.reddit.com, like Yogo Craig, Gavra, Jeff Rose, Cap Kipper, and Hossimo, and S. Snapier all submitted the stories we talked about today.
Absolutely. We like to do this on our show where we go around with our guests and talk about some of the projects they're working on before we get to our pop quiz. Let's start with Jamie. Jamie, what are some of the projects you're up to these days?
Oh, wow. Where do I begin? So currently my podcast is on hiatus, so I'm trying to take a break. But while I'm on a break, I'm writing. I have a new book that's going to be coming out in 2018 called Black Girl Nerds, the same name as the website and the community that I've built over the last 4 years. And it's about the intersection of Black feminism and geek culture. And I'm co-authoring that book with Shelley Stratton. So very excited about that. That'll be published under Penguin Random House in early 2018. And then the other projects that I'm working on is what I do all of the time. I'm the managing editor of blackgirlnerds.com. So get pitches every day. I write articles myself. Every now and then there may be opportunities to go to press conferences and junkets and do movie reviews and things of that nature. And then every now and then I'll go to all of the different conventions from San Diego Comic Con to New York Comic Con and such, and do panels and all that fun stuff. So, yeah, those are some of the projects that I work on a daily and or seasonally, I guess I could say. and then daily is definitely the managing editing role over on the website.
Nice. Jamie, what's it like to take a break from podcasting? I've never done that.
I had to do it.
I need to be inspired by you. Yeah.
Really do. I think it's important because you can burn yourself out on this. I mean, I don't have to tell you guys this. You can burn yourself out on podcasting. Mm-hmm. And I'm not only podcasting, but I'm also, you know, working on a website. I'm also curating a social online community with my Twitter accounts and Facebook and things like that. Because I'm very engaged with my readers and followers. So something has to give. Plus, I have a day job. Right. So during the day, not related to Black Girl Nerds at all, I have a day job. So something has to give at some point, and I just decided I'm going to take a break. Our new show resumes in January. So I just let the listeners know, hey, we're taking a break. I announce it on the podcast. I announce it on social media so that they know. But yeah, it's great. It's a great feeling.
Just recharge those creative batteries. But then at the same time, you're pouring in a lot of effort on that book. Congratulations on that. That sounds fantastic.
Yeah. Thank you very much. And I'm also working on another podcast that's going to come out in February about Black superheroines. So really excited about that.
Oh, that's awesome. That's super cool. Yeah. I'm checking it out right now. If you go to blacknerds.com, you can find all the details you need. If you want to support them, I see you have a Patreon. That's awesome. Link there as
Black
well.
Black Girl Nerds. BlackGirlNerds.com.
Very, very cool. BlackGirlNerds.com. Well, thanks for filling us in. This sounds awesome. I can't wait to hear more about your book when it comes out.
Thank you.
Ariel, tell us about your life and what you've got going on right now.
First of all, I cannot wait to read your book, girl. That sounds freaking awesome. Second, so I'm a filmmaker, indie filmmaker. So I got this really cool... it's called Ganymede Event, and basically it's told through first-person blogs. A major biological outbreak occurs on the Ganymede colony, and kind of like World War Z for fans of the book, where you get the whole story through personal entries and personal observations of
like,
it.
Like documentary-style coverage of the events, that sort of thing.
Yeah. But given the fact that I was not good at camera work when I started this endeavor, I was like, cool, locked-off shot that I can't even mess up with bad lighting. So necessity, technological necessity kind of dictated the form that story could be told. So we're finishing up that, but very fortunate to have the amazing Allison Reed from High School Musical be a part of our Ganymede world. Mm. And then also we are doing a festival run for a phenomenal, weird Lynchian film noir story called Los Angeles Overnight. It stars Peter Bogdanovich, Lynn Shay, Sally Kirkland, Azeem Risk from Power Rangers, also a fencing buddy of mine. Funny story.
Oh, cool.
But that is making festival rounds at this moment. We just had Fort Lauderdale give us a very warm welcome this past week, and that's directed by Michael Chrysalakis, written by Guy Jackson. Los Angeles Overnight. Then my Macbeth homage, which is a really f***ed up horror film called The Letter Red, is in post currently, directed by Justin Theney, starring Edward Gus, myself, Ethan McDowell. And that should be having some very exciting news shortly. The amazing Joel Hodge was our cinematographer, known from Bellflower and Sundance fame a few years back. So very, very fortunate to work with these amazing people on a micro budget. Nice. Finally in post on a project called Snake Out of Compton.
All right.
So a rap crew fights a giant mutated snake to save Los Angeles from uncertain doom. Written by Return of the Ghostbusters, my all-time favorite fan film because I got to be a part of it. Written by that writer, Tim Johnson. Directed by Hank Braxton, who also directed Return of the Ghostbusters back in the day, back when there were only chat rooms and no Indiegogo or Kickstarter. We got financed via PayPal donations.
Wow.
And that honestly, like finding internet archives of that movie blew my mind. I'm like, somebody cared enough about this to put that up somewhere?
It's all out there someplace.
Right?
Yep. Oh, that's super cool. Where's the best place for people to sort of follow you? You're doing a lot of stuff on Twitter or have a website or something?
I am lame. I am still on Facebook. My puppet gets more action on Twitter than I do. Reginald Argyle from Sock Puppet Shakespeare. But you can catch up with me on Facebook. IMDb, Internet Movie Database, is a great way to see upcoming projects. But Facebook, actress Ariel Brackfeld, and you can see all the weird, cool indie stuff I'm doing.
That's cool. You know, the book reminded me, or not the book, but the Ganymede thing she was talking about immediately reminded me of this book I'm reading right now, which you recommended to me. And it's just like Ganymede everywhere I look now. It's like when
it's a very underserved move.
I agree. You see, it's like when you buy a new car and you think everyone's driving your car. It's like that. But
everybody's on Ganymede now, just as Scott's reading.
I don't know what's going on. This is like the eighth reference to Ganymede in the last 2 days. So That's
next
awesome.
Next will be on Cygnus, and then we'll have to take that one back,
right,
too.
Right.
Perfect. Or Io. Is it Io?
What's the one? Io, yeah.
I like Io. Io's my favorite.
Titan.
Do you know the Greek story or the mythology behind Io?
No.
It's pretty messed up.
Now I'm going to have to find out. I'll have to look that up.
Basically, Io had grabbed Zeus's attention, like most fair young maidens did. And
Zeus wasn't terribly discerning in the mythology.
You know, if it had a hole, he was game.
Yeah.
If I may be so crude. So Hera was very disappointed in his choice and decided to turn her into a cow. Mm. And because Zeus was also not discerning what species he was generally involved in. When that didn't work, again, she became a constellation. So
wow. They always ended up out in the stars. It's so weird how that stuff went down. Well, it's good to hear about both of what you guys have going on. At the end of the show, we will, again, refer people to various websites and things to make sure they keep up with what you're going on or have going on. Tom, right now, though, we're going to talk about StayRoasted.com. StayRoasted.com is this rad new service. Now, you know, we're all familiar with things like Netflix. And Netflix, when they were doing the disc service, was really cool because you could say, here's my queue, and these are the next movies I want to come to my house. And you would choose those based on whatever reason you had for wanting to see Shawshank Redemption for the 500th time. There is now a coffee service that's a lot like that.
Oh, wow.
And it's super cool. It's at StayRoasted.com, specifically StayRoasted.com/geek, where I'll tell you about a sweet deal coming up. But, Tom, you've tried the service. And you liked it.
Yeah, man. I have subscribed to several of these kinds of services, and a lot of them have gotten good at finding good roasters, finding good beans, and delivering them to you. Stay Roasted did not disappoint me. In fact, one of my favorite roasts of coffee that I've had in a couple of years came from them this month when I was trying them out. But the cool thing about it is they give you great web controls over what's getting sent to you. You can choose what roast you want. I chose a dark roast. You can choose how often you want it to go. You can put some money into the account and keep it going. And then you can pause it. You can unpause it if you're going on vacation. So it's good coffee beans at a good price delivered right to you. And you get control over when you're going to get it. So you're not going to be stuck like, oh, crap, I forgot to you know, go through the hoops that I needed to pause it. It's really easy to do.
Yeah, and there are no commitments. It's going to cost you about 60 cents maybe for a brewed cup. And they're your roasters. You keep track of it. They're up on your preferences. Real simple to do it. They handle the rest. And again, there's no contracts. There's no big commitments or anything like that. Here's the best part. If you visit StayRoasted.com/geek right now, you get your first bag of coffee for free. All you pay is shipping. It's that simple. And they have gift cards. They have other ways during this holiday to give somebody the perfect gift. That coffee lover among you who is picky about their coffee, there's no better place to go. It's, again, StayRoasted.com/geek. Get your first bag for free. All right. Time for the pop quiz.
America scores and wins.
All right. Oh, that music didn't play. There we go. All right. Hey, look, everybody. It's the pop quiz. Don't know what that is? Let me explain. We on the show like to quiz our guests in areas of their expertise, or at least areas that... we got from our booker who sent, you know, Hammond called you guys and said, hey, do you want to be on the show? And so hopefully he was right. I've learned lately that he's not always right. Lately, I've learned that sometimes he tricks you guys into doing weird topics. But don't worry, there's nothing huge on the line here. They're all going to be fine. Ariel, we're going to start with you.
All right, Hammond, I'm going to have words with you later, sir.
You very well may. This has happened before. Let's see what we have here. I have a topic for you. And that topic is Ginger Snaps trivia.
Woo! Ginger Snaps, which one?
He just says Ginger Snaps trivia.
Now, like the cookies?
I think it's a film or a movie or
It's only the best cheesy werewolf film.
Oh, good.
Ginger werewolf that exists. It's a phenomenal franchise if you only watch the first one.
All right. That sounds interesting to me. I have a show all I have show
thinking about the cookies.
Yeah,
there.
No kidding. Me too. I have a movie or I have a show all about movies. Maybe this is a good one for us. All right. If you get one of these right, you'll hear this. If you get it wrong, you'll hear this. Tom's going to keep track of the score and then compare you both at the end. Here is your first question in your category. Number one, who plays Bridget Fitzgerald in Ginger Snaps?
Oh my God, I'm terrible. Okay, how long do I have?
Is the you know, reasonable amount of 5-6 seconds, something like
remember,
that.
Remember, I don't want to have to drive to pick up my medicine, so you have all night.
Oh my God. No, I don't remember her name. That's really terrible.
I'm going to give you one of these. You can guess. You can just throw a name if you want.
I know John Fawcett directs.
Oh, you're so close. It's Emily Perkins is the correct answer. Emily.
But Ariel does get a point because she correctly answered, I do not remember the name.
That's right. Tom does this weird scoring thing. I should have warned you. All right, next up. Who directed Ginger Snaps?
John Fawcett.
Well done. How do we know? Why do I know that name? What else has he
done? Because she just said it 2 seconds ago.
I don't mean from that. Like a movie. I've seen other movies with his name on it. All right. In what fictional town/suburb is the movie set?
Bailey Downs.
Very well done.
That was half point speed bonus for that. That was good.
That was so fast. My ding came.
I know everything but the freaking lead actress, which is terrible.
I'm good.
A terrible person.
It's all right. Here's your next one. How many movies are there in the Ginger Snap series?
Oh my God. I want to say 5.
You are incorrect. The answer is 3. There are Ginger Snaps, Ginger Snaps 2, Unleashed, and a prequel called Ginger Snaps Back: The Beginning.
But there should be 2 more.
Oh, they sound terrible. Yeah, maybe there will be.
The first one's outstanding.
All right. Is it just somebody who's killing? I'm like, what's the deal? Tell us the quick backstory.
Yeah, All right. Imagine Carrie was actually a vampire.
Okay.
And wanted to get even with her awful, awful classmates.
Okay.
And she has like 6 nipples, which is just a spectacular feat in and of itself.
All right. Is this woman like actually a ginger? Like she's a redhead.
She is.
Oh.
She is.
Right. Ginger snaps. I get it.
you actually have no doubt that she's a real ginger due to a couple scenes in the movie.
All right, I believe you. It sounds
for
like
our mature audience members.
Terrible, terrible film. I may have to watch it. All right, final question: at what film festival did Ginger Snaps first premiere?
Oh, man.
I'll give you a hint. It was not in the United States, if that helps.
That's a hard question. Who would know that?
Maybe Toronto After Dark?
Let's find out if the Canadians hosted it. Did they? Nope. It was the Munich Fantasy Film Fest.
Oh, those Germans.
I know. Always up to no good, those Germans. Well done. You've finished your questioning. However, we're not going to see what your score is quite yet because it's going to be Jamie's turn. Jamie, are you ready for your questions?
I am not ready, but go ahead.
All right, great.
There's a point right there for the honest answer.
Your trivia category is DC TV Universe trivia. All right?
Okay.
You know, Flash, Arrow, all that stuff.
Yeah.
First question. In what year did Arrow premiere?
Ooh, okay. So it's in its 5th season. So 2012?
That is correct. 2012 is correct.
Yes. It was the year I moved to LA. That's how I remember it.
Oh, that's right. That is the year you moved to LA. Yeah. San Mateo. There you go. I got it.
Nope.
No? Wait.
Yep. You lose a point.
San Rafael. San Rafael. That's it. I knew it. Obviously, I didn't really know it. All right.
James and I split a point by default.
Right.
Next question. Who plays Supergirl in the Supergirl TV series?
Oh, man. I see her face, but I can't think of her name.
I always get her name wrong, too.
Yeah, her last name is kind of ridiculous for me to say. I'll say that.
Yeah, if I say another cast member's name, can I get a point?
I don't know. Tom, how do you feel about that?
All right, Calista Flockhart's in it.
All right, so let's see. Is it Calista Flockhart? Incorrect. It is Melissa Benoist.
But you get a half point for being correct that Calista Flockhart is, in fact, in Supergirl.
Well, first season, right? I hear she's not around much in the new stuff. Is that true? I haven't actually seen
it. She's only in the first episode.
Okay. There you go. Harrison wouldn't let her off the ranch. All right, next question.
That's
terrible, isn't it? All right, next one. How old was Barry Allen when his mother died? Barry Allen being the Flash.
Oh, crap.
That's tall.
Nice.
I am going to say, because he was kind of young, I'm going to say 14.
14, is that correct? 11 is the correct answer. 11.
Damn it.
All right, so you get 0.75 for having about 3/4 of the age.
Well done. second to last question. What character does Brandon Routh play in The Legends of Tomorrow?
Oh, he plays the Atom. Wait.
Is that your answer?
Yeah.
Okay. You are correct. It is the Atom. Also, Ray Palmer would have sufficed as his alter ego. Also, didn't that premiere on Arrow? But I guess he's now on Legends of
Tomorrow. He started, yeah. That's
right. He was on Arrow, yeah.
Okay. Final question. Who directed the pilot episode of Arrow?
Holy crap. Who knows these questions?
Right?
Hammond.
To these questions.
I think Hammond knows them.
I guarantee you a guy.
The person who directed the pilot episode knows the answer. That
he knows.
Might be it.
Yeah.
Greg Berlanti, maybe.
Yeah. I'll give you a hint. It is a he, I guess.
It is a he. Mm-hmm. Guggenheim. Mark Guggenheim. Probably not. He's the producer, but...
David Nutter is the name of this person.
Wow.
David okay. Nutter.
That Nutter.
Yeah, that Nutter. It's very British. I don't know his name, but I do know that you both done pretty well, I think. But Tom's the final word. Tom, how'd they do?
Both ended up with 4 points out of five.
Wow, not bad. What? Tied up?
Wow.
Oh, that's great.
We got bees.
We haven't had a tie in ages.
So. Yeah, it's been a while since we had a dead heat like that.
Super impressed.
There's a sudden death round? And what
yeah.
are we doing?
Yeah, how do
we... Calm back.
No, we play it like youth soccer. Everybody gets a trophy.
Yay.
Yay, right. I like that.
Everyone's a winner. All right, it's time for this.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
Well, as we round things down today, we'd like to spend a little time predicting the future. We used to have a little show, Tom and I, called Forecast. It's now a segment on this show called Forecast, and it's where the four of us have a prediction about the future. Tom, put this one together. Tom, what do you predict?
Okay, so I've been thinking a lot about wearables. This is where this starts. And fitness trackers, smartwatches, and the like. And I was thinking about augmented reality glasses and how those could take over a lot of the things we want from wearables. You could do heart rate sensing on your head. And there's been a lot of talk about augmented reality glasses maybe shrinking down, maybe being implantable, or at least, you know, not as bulky as actual glasses. I think, and I don't know when, but I think at some point holographic projections get good enough and the hardware gets small enough that everybody has the hardware and we don't need screens anymore. Ooh. In fact, laptops and tablets might just be certain size keyboards because we might still want that old-fashioned keyboard feel, but we'll just see the screen in front of us.
And that's so here's my first question about that. Do you think we will want to simulate the old, by then it will be old, but the old feeling of having a flat panel right in front of you? Like, will we create those kinds of practical
You'll be able to
distances?
Customize it. You can have whatever size you want.
You can have the old typewriter click, you know?
Mm. Yeah.
I honestly think that when it comes to implants and things like that, like permanently changing our chemistry, I think that that'll be one of the last moves, and it'll be when we're able to... you know, adjust it with a device like a tricorder. But I think that the draw towards body modification is actually going to be a slower draw than just wearable technology. But I do agree that contacts, things like that are able to be removed will become more and more commonplace. I mean, Google Glass, I feel, was not nearly as successful as they were hoping for. Mm-hmm. But you also, again, you look at the Oculus, you look at these VR devices and even augmented reality available on our day-to-day tech, like cell phones. I mean, we're going to have a lot of tangible things, I think, for the foreseeable future. But I do agree with you, in the far future, when we have the technology to adjust, augment, you know, repair without invasive surgery, at that point, it'll be implanted.
Oh, it'll be amazing. That's how I want it. So Jamie, here's the scenario. Right now, we got to wear big floppy goggles with like a big dumb cable in the back to simulate a kind of a 3D world. And obviously, this is just a stepping stone towards something more refined. Google Glass never really made it out of sort of the testing phase. So consumers, you know, is always priced way out of their range. There's rumors Apple and others are working on, you know, glasses-based things.
Well, Facebook's talking about work one that wouldn't have to be tethered that you can wear outside. Obviously, Microsoft has the HoloLens. So, you know, there's some stuff along that.
Right, but the point is they're all stepping stones toward what we all really want, which is, I mean, back in the day, we knew we wanted portable communications devices. None of us really thought, well, they needed to be 10-pound giant phone bricks that you needed, you know, a huge battery to power. But we got to a place now where I have these super thin, long-lasting, well-powered little devices that we can keep in our pocket. And so we've kind of hit that place finally. But it seems like there is no... The final solution for this is always going to be, when do I get an implant, right? Like, right. And when is right. it, like you said, non-invasive or whatever. But Jamie, how soon is this? Like, when can we expect it? Do your Ooh. Greatest prediction power you can right now.
I think we need to just kind of like recreate what we've seen in previous films and television shows. So like what we've seen in Minority Report, right? I don't know how soon it's going to be. I mean, I don't know much about Google Glass because I wasn't cool enough to be able to try it out and see how the technology worked. But I definitely feel like augmented reality is the path that we're going with our technology, especially with the very successful and very popularized Pokemon Go app. I think that that is something that we're definitely striving towards. So hopefully it's sooner than later. I think it'd be really great. You know, we've been seeing like really cool holographic images of like, there was a meme or there was like a GIF or something on social media of Tupac performing at a concert. So like seeing stuff like that and, you know, seeing really cool images in that way, I definitely think we're going to probably get there sooner than later. But as to when it's going to happen, I have no idea.
At least when you have somebody.
Black Mirror is what I'm afraid of, though.
Oh, like, yeah. I can't watch that show. I've tried to watch it. I'm afraid to watch it. I need to watch it. It's kind of like.
It's ridiculously scary, real. Yeah. And it's. It feels like it's life imitating art, imitating right. life, especially with the Trump election, because there is one particular episode that's pretty much the Trump election of how. If you want to figure out how Donald Trump got elected, watch season 2, episode 3 of Black Mirror.
That's not the video game one, is it?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm trying to figure out which one of those is the Dan Trachtenberg directed video game episode. And that's the one I really want to see.
Season 1.
Oh, that's season 3. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, season 3. That's right. Yeah.
The newer stuff is him.
Season 1 was where they were able to fast forward through their experience. Like it was recorded in their neurons, their experiences, and they were able to watch it like Netflix. But what I will say is, like, I think that our understanding of privacy and wanting to share, like, our experiences with everybody, like, I think within the next 10 years there will be implant options. But, again, it's going to be separated by class divide, financial resources. You know, the kids will get the implant, you know, and they're over their eyebrow, and then their younger brothers and sisters will have a non-visible scar with it. But I think that with our differing views on what is shareable, what our own privacy consists of, what our experiences are that we want to share with the wider world, unknown strangers, I mean, that's already shifted so severely where the idea of implants being able to store our experiences, like a Black Mirror episode or like Minority Report, or being able to, you know, jack into the Matrix or step into, you know, any augmented reality holodeck that's portable. I think that is really around the corner. But I do think that, again, it'll be really hard for people without financial resources to access that technology.
Yeah. I always think about one of the biggest hangups is going to be, you know, today, if somebody's wearing a VR headset, even if it's Gear VR, something with their phone, they've got a big dumb headset on, it's blocking their view. And if they walk into a wall, it's kind of on them, right? Like you just kind of go, oh yeah, well they're in VR. Of course they're impaired in terms of their ability to see what's in front of them. But if it comes to the day where we have small implants, and you don't know when someone's using one or not.
Right.
Like there's a lot of questions about that.
Absolutely.
Whether that is a regulatable thing, it probably would have to be. Because otherwise you're just asking
for
trouble.
Well, their augmented reality will send a signal to the cloud that will indicate on your augmented reality by a blue halo over them that they are using an augmented reality that might impede their vision, and you should be aware of that.
Oh, super cool. I love that idea.
A yellow halo when they're recording your conversation.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Or red. Yeah.
Or red. Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting. Video. I hadn't thought of that. That's actually a good point. If we're all tied into the same network or whatever.
But I mean, people are able to hack the current, you know, the current technology infrastructure. So I don't see why people can't hack biological implants.
Oh, they'll always,
if they're all,
there will always be hackers, right? Always.
Yeah, it'll always be an arms race, right?
Yeah.
Sure.
you know, what are you doing the right security practices?
Yeah, the hacking, the only time the hacking gets scary is if, well, it's scary anyway, but if we have implants, is you don't want to wake up in a tub full of ice with your implant removed because a hacker took it, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's where stuff gets freaky. But also, human beings have a tendency, and I'm one of them, so this isn't me not taking credit
for
this.
You are a human being.
I am a human being, and I'm someone who does this sometimes. Sometimes my brain jumps straight to, how will this be misused? How will this crash into my car? Sure. How will my automated whatever do this?
Smart to think that way.
And I think that's just a human imperative to think that way.
It's an evolutionary advantage.
Yes. It keeps us surviving, and it makes us cautious, and usually in the long run, it makes us do better with what the thing was, whatever that may be. I mean, if you just suddenly introduce cars today, in a vacuum.
It's a horrible idea.
Yeah, it's a horrible idea. And even if you had all
somebody
this...
Somebody can pilot a two-ton missile?
But I mean, even if it's like, even if we have all the safeguards we have today in place and ready to roll on day one, it still would sound insane to everybody living.
Right.
And so these things take time. I'm confident that over time we'll get to a place that this tech makes sense. It just can't happen tomorrow.
Yeah.
We're screwed. I mean, even with driverless cars, you know, it's like we're right around the corner from that. We are literally on the verge of this brand new, you know, massive integration of technology. Mm-hmm. And yeah, of course, the main concern comes back to human life, human variables, you know, but at the same point, that technology is going to proceed regardless.
And end up saving a ton of lives. Like the math, the way the math works is we spend a lot of time killing each other with what we think is safe. And that thing won't so much. So, yeah. I mean, I'm all for this, Tom, is what I'm saying. I love your idea, and bring it to me now, is what I'm saying.
And where can I work?
Yeah, and where can I buy it? Can I buy it now? Throwing money at the screen. All right. That's your forecast for the week. A good discussion came out of that. Before we go, though, one quick more time. Let's get some idea of where people can find the fine works of you two. Let's start with Jamie. Jamie, remind people again where they can find you on the internet.
Absolutely. You can find me on Twitter mostly because I'm just there 24/7 at Black Girl Nerds on Twitter, Facebook, and all of our other socials is Black Girl Nerds. And the website is blackgirlnerds.com. And I have a podcast that airs weekly. We're right now on a hiatus. We'll be back in January. And you can listen to that via iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Spreaker, pretty much anywhere where you can live stream podcasts. And yeah, look for my book coming out in February of 2018 by Penguin Random House Publishing of the same name, Black Girl Nerds. And also you can follow my personal account at Jamie Broadnax on Twitter. I always follow back on that account. So check that out.
Nice. Go check it out. It was great having you on today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Ariel, tell us where people can find you on Facebook or otherwise.
Well, in about 10 years, you can follow me on my biological implant as I pet my cat. Uh-huh. But in the meantime, IMDb, Ariel Brackfeld, Facebook, actress Ariel Brackfeld. You can keep up with a bunch of cool film projects. I'm also on Twitter at A. Brackfeld, Super Nintendo smartass. So
nice.
Right.
I like that name a lot. That's a good one.
But no, it was this was awesome, and Jamie, that's really freaking cool that you're getting an actual like book publishing deal.
Like, I feel like important for the first time in my entire life.
That's amazing. Crazy. Tom and I have both published self-published things a lot, and to various degrees of whatever. But it's so cool to talk to somebody who's got like a publishing deal. There's something so official about that. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, thank you both for being on. You're both awesome. Tom, any final thoughts from you, sir?
Yeah, just a real quick note that Ron Richards of iFanboy and myself have launched a new podcast directly in opposition to my earlier desire to maybe take more breaks called DamnFinePodcast.com, where we are rewatching Twin Peaks and talking about each episode in the run-up to the return of the show to Showtime, after which we will be talking about those episodes. So you can subscribe to that in iTunes or your favorite podcast app, and you can find all the details at DamnFinePodcast.com.
Nice. For everything else, guys, don't forget to check us out at CurrentGeek.com, FrogPants.com for more podcasts just like this one. If you want to find us on Twitter, we are at Current Geek. Oh my gosh, what else? CurrentGeek.reddit.com, currentgeek.com, currentgeek at gmail.com is our email address, 801-471-0462. You can leave voicemails as well. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom, and our guests. We'll see you next time.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we review an interesting lawsuit for copyright infringement filed against another producer of a recent pop culture favorite TV show, this being Sony Pictures Entertainment and the show Breaking Bad. Although it has been 3 years since Breaking Bad aired new content, an artist from Mexico named Humberto Puentes Segura has in the past month just sued for copyright infringement of a logo he created and licensed to Sony for use in the TV show. The logo is the two chickens with sombreros, which is the centerpiece of the Los Pollos Hermanos restaurant chain featured prominently in the middle seasons of the show. You may ask, what grounds does the artist have to stand on if he licensed his work? That's a good question, but essentially the controversy boils down to the specifics of the license agreement signed by the parties. Segura believes he licensed the artwork only as set dressing, props, and wardrobes in connection with production of a TV show, but not for reproduction of the art on merchandise. Of course, the wild success of Breaking Bad, and especially the storylines centering on Gustavo Fring and his business front, Los Pollos Hermanos, have led to marketability of this fake product line and its associated logo. Sony is behind the internet sales of things like coffee mugs and t-shirts with the double chicken logo. The artist claims that this was beyond what he agreed to license to them, making these sales copyright infringement. He also registered the mark with the U.S. Copyright Office in January of this year, so while he can sue Sony now, thanks to that registration, he's not entitled to statutory damages that only come as an option with early copyright registration before an infringement occurs. That means the undisclosed damages that the artist will pursue will need to be proven actual money loss damages. Even if there's merit to the claim based on how the license was drafted, the potential risk to Sony will be small, thanks to no risk of the sometimes very high thousands of dollars which come into play with statutory damages. The bottom line is, if you are a company that licenses works of art, music, or the like from third parties, make certain the rights obtained cover all ancillary or secondary uses that you may want for the property. Otherwise, you risk the revenge of a disgruntled artist when you make the big bucks on your product or concept. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes, get more at frogpants.com.